another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, where history proves that truth, or at least their version of it, is truly stranger than fiction. I recently started giving some shorter clips of the longer podcast that I did with Cindy Jacobs, about Cindy Jacobs, I should say, where I'm talking through some of her weird numerologies and how that relates back to the Latter Rain teachings that I grew up with. And people started asking a question that I get asked frequently about many of the modern ministries. What was her theological lineage? How does she connect back to this weird mess that I'm talking about? Why am I talking about Cindy Jacobs on the William Branham Historical Research Podcast? I get asked this question about many different ministries because when people see the new ministry that is resurrecting all of the weird old things that I bring up in the Latter Rain movement and post-World War II healing revival, they immediately associate them in their minds and they realize that there's more to this than meets the eye. Nobody just comes up with this stuff magically, right? So somebody asked me, what was the theological lineage? Could I create a flow chart or a diagram similar to what we did in the Latter Rain movement as it related to Branhamism? But the issue that really comes to play here is the fact that most of what you see is cross-pollination. And instead of, you know, people are wanting an organized hierarchy with flow chart where you can see a diagram, this person learned from this other person learned from that person, so on and so forth. It's more like if you were to take a paintball gun and shoot it at the wall and splat, there's this big mess of paint everywhere. That's really the historical lineage that most of these people can follow. It's a cross-pollination of ideas where one person comes up with some harebrained idea that's not quite biblical but sounds good. Some other person picks it up and says, well, that sounds really good and it's extra biblical. I wonder if I can come up with some more extra biblical things to compound to what they said and sound better than they did. And it turns into this big, I don't know, the spiritual competition, I guess, and people just go to extremes with it. Some of those extremes, because it's extra biblical, they repeat the same patterns, which is odd, and it makes it look like they copied somebody else. But in fact, what they're doing is they're just taking a pattern that somebody else has tried before, and when they take that pattern and they repeat it, you're going to end up with similar results. However, with Cindy Jacobs, there is some weird history that I can't really say it's directly related to Cindy Jacobs, but I can say that many ministries like Cindy Jacobs and others have come up in this weird history. As I'm studying it, I don't magically in my mind link the two weird ministries that I'm about to get into. I don't say that they're directly related, but I do see a pattern of influence, and I wanted to talk through that just a bit because it is really important. And Cindy Jacobs, her ministries, as it relates to the New Apostolic Reformation, it's incredibly important. She and her husband founded the Generals of Intercession, I think it's called Generals International now, which is basically a spiritual warfare prayer institution where they can take ideas that you might read in a Harry Potter book, put the word Christian on it, and do the same thing and say, we are controlling these demons in this corner. So they have a fundamental element of what is the New Apostolic Reformation. What they have is not original. You can find some of those ideas if you go back into Latter Rain. And so because of that, because people are starting to see, well, wait a minute, they were doing many of the same things with Branham and others. Why are they doing it again? Are they connected? Who did they learn it from? What is this historical lineage? So you have people like Dutch Sheets, Chuck Pierce, Mike Bickle, others that they're connected to Cindy Jacobs through this, what does she call it, the Apostolic Council of Prophetic Elders or something like this. I think she was in that group since 1999. It was a group established by C. Peter Wagner. And beyond that, she has connections, many connections back to Christ for the Nations Institute, which, as we've learned, if you've studied the Revival History series, was founded by Gordon Lindsay, who is William Branham's original campaign manager. And it developed out of the Voice of Healing movement, which was created for the Voice of Healing magazine, which started by advertising Branham. So there's a deep Branham history to all of this, but the history goes a little bit more insidious and deeper as you look through it. Now, I'm going to be mentioning many names here. I don't want you to automatically associate some of the worst extreme things that I'm going to talk about with the people that I'm going to talk about. And I'm going to have to, because of the subject matter, I will have to change some of the names, or otherwise some of the platforms just simply won't publish me. I'm going to be talking about the Klan, and I purposefully did not use the other two words in that phrase that is the Klan. But when I talk about it in this podcast, I'm just going to say the K's. And if you hear me say the K's, you know what I'm talking about, because there is a history of the K's that links to the history behind the cross-pollination that eventually birthed Cindy Jacobs. It does not mean that she's related in any way, shape, or form to it, but I'll let you, as the listener, come up with your own conclusions as to how much cross-pollination was involved and how much was agenda that was involved, because there was agenda involved with this. Interestingly, some of the patterns in the agenda really, really matches what you see today in many of the New Apostolic Reformation churches. So I'll be talking about the K's. I'm also going to be talking about Southern Baptists. This is a subject that I've not talked about yet. I have, when we escaped Branhamism, I actually went to a Southern Baptist church for a while. And it was in that church that I first learned that there was a simple gospel that you can learn from the Bible. You can read it. I learned some really good things. So I'm not going to be talking negatively about the Southern Baptist Convention, but in its history, like all of the other histories that I've examined, you can find some really bad apples. And there's a particular section of history that is important as it relates to Cindy Jacobs, as it relates to Christ for the Nations, Branhamism, all of this, that does tie back to the K's. I'm going to talk through that a bit. And specifically in Dallas, where Jacobs and, you know, many of these ministries really emerged from. And there's a reason for this. I want to talk through that just a bit. So I'm going to be mentioning a lot of histories that I have already covered, but this is another episode where I'm taking many of the pieces of the puzzle that I've already given you, and I'm going to let you connect them as I walk through some of the I guess I would call it the coincidences. I'll say it like that. And first, some legalese. I'm not making any claims about Cindy Jacobs or Southern Baptists, their beliefs, their motives, their moral responsibility. I'm actually just examining the documented regional and institutional networks around the Texas Baptists, the Pentecostals, the Revivalist circles, and some of the history that people just are not familiar with. But if you see what happened in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you begin to understand that there were some really bad people doing some really bad things that very eerily match some of the bad things that you see happening today, and the agenda is much the same. They just have different names and organizations. So I'm going to talk through that a good bit. The first person I'm going to talk about is William Branham's mentor, which I've mentioned frequently in the podcast and various series. His name was Roy E. Davis, and he was one of the original members of the original K's back in 1914, 1915, whenever it began. He was one of the people who wrote the Constitution bylaws and basically created the organization as a Christian fraternal order. And I'm air quoting Christian, because it obviously was it was far worse than a Christian organization. I'll say it like that. So this is a name that I will mention, Roy Davis. I'm also going to mention Congressman William D. Upshaw, which I've also mentioned a few times in this podcast in various series, because he was largely responsible for lifting William Branham into fame after Branham started to stumble from fame. He was a congressman who is well known. He was a congressman from the state of Georgia. He was well known for his being crippled and using crutches to, you know, walk around as he's giving speeches. When he was a child, he was crippled and he was in a wheelchair for a period of time. But over time, if you read through the newspapers and you listen to the testimony by other people in Congress, over time, he really didn't need the wheelchair at all, and he really didn't need the crutches. There was one congressman who even mentioned, I saw him running through the aisles in Congress, and his crutches were just barely even touching the ground. So this guy didn't even need it. And the congressman or the representative which was talking about it said, you know, in today's world, we have braces, and they have these bone braces that you can put inside of your pants leg. He really doesn't need the crutch at all, but he uses it as a prop, basically, is what he was alleging, if you understand what he's saying. So I'm going to be talking about Congressman Upshaw. Upshaw was working with Davis, and according to one single newspaper report, Upshaw was also involved with the original K's back in the early 1915, I guess it was, when they were rebirthed. But he also is the congressman who single-handedly kept the K's from being abolished in the 20s whenever there was a congressional inquiry into the K's. So he made a partnership with Roy Davis that lasted for decades, which I'll get into that just a bit. But it all comes back to one single thing that I was investigating that ties all of this together with Cindy Jacobs. I was looking, when somebody asked me her theological lineage, I was looking through, okay, who is she? Who are her parents? What did they believe? What church did they go to? And I found something odd. You can search and search and search, and you can find her mother's name. But she never mentioned her father's name. And whenever a minister does this, all of my red flags go up. If you're not mentioning one parent, there's something there. There's some reason why you're not. I want to know what it is. And I'm not saying that she has any reason to cover anything up, but I'll let you as the listener decide, well, is there more here than meets the eye? And that's what I'm going to be getting into. So let's start with Roy Davis. If you've listened to my Revival History series or watched the videos on YouTube or practically any of the research that I have done since 2015, you're probably familiar with Roy Davis. Roy Davis was William Branham's mentor. As I mentioned, he was one of the founding members of the original K's. He was actually the second in command to William Joseph Simmons, who founded the K's. And he and Simmons founded other similar organizations, which I won't get into that in this podcast, but if you want that history, you can go to the website and you can find this information or listen to the Revival History series. But needless to say, he was deeply embedded to this type of organization. It was a fraternal organization that was intended to be both Christian and patriotic, but as it continued, to become more like a vigilante organization. It wasn't what you would consider Christian by no means, but the original founders believed that it was, and Davis was one of these people. However, if you look at Davis's life, you really question whether he was a Christian, because he had a trail of criminal activity from Texas into Louisiana and Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Louisville, Kentucky, and finally to Jeffersonville, Indiana, William Branham's hometown, where he held a revival where likely William Branham first met him, and the police arrested him in the midst of his revival, carried him to jail because he was taking a young girl across state lines for reasons I won't mention on this podcast. That young girl later became his wife in the 1940s, and that history does come into play, so I wanted to drop that hint. But needless to say, the character of this person was not a good character. He was not an honest person. He claimed to have been a converted spiritualist, and we have evidence that suggests he and Branham went to a spiritualist camp in Indiana called Camp Chesterfield. And part of his revival trick was that he was supposedly outing the spiritualists for their tactics and saying, we have a true, better way, and was essentially teaching spiritualism in the form of Christianity, if you read through some of the comments in the newspaper. So this is where William Branham would have first came in contact with some of his weird, harebrained ideas. But Roy Davis was his mentor. Roy Davis is the one who baptized him into the Pentecostal faith, who ordained William Branham as a minister, and through Davis, William Branham became connected to some very important people. Some of them were with the K's, some of them were embedded into Pentecostalism, UPC people, etc. So Davis was really, really important to the latter rain Voice of Healing revival that would come simply by connecting Branham to those people and ordaining Branham, teaching him the Pentecostal faith, etc. Here's the catch. Davis was not a Pentecostal. And in fact, Branham, whenever he mentions Davis, he seems to know this because he's always dishonest about what Davis had as a church. Davis's church was called the First Pentecostal Baptist Church of God, and it was advertised in all of the newspapers as a Pentecostal organization. It entertained Pentecostal ministers from Cincinnati to Chicago, Illinois. All of these Pentecostal ministers came to his church, and it was well connected through the music and the singing and the choirs, and many of the entertainment aspects of his church was appealing, apparently, to the Pentecostals. Definitely a Pentecostal church, and Davis admits this later in 1950, which I'll get into that as well. But he was a Baptist minister. He was ordained Baptist in Texas. He was apparently kicked out of the Baptist church in Georgia when it was found out that he had multiple wives in multiple states who didn't know each other. There's a weird history there that we did talk about in the revival history series if you want to hear it. But he was not a good man. I'll just say it like that. But he was not a good man who was kicked out of the Baptist church, became Pentecostal for a while. I think he later converted back to a different flavor of Baptist in Texas because of his notoriety in the K's. Part of the story that we're going to be getting into is that, especially in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the K's dominated, and there were reasons why he was accepted among the evangelicals. I'll just say it like that. We'll get into that history in a bit. But needless to say, once he ordained Branham, once Branham started preaching, once Branham gets connected to all of these people, he starts touring on revivals with Roy Davis. And Roy Davis is taking Branham into places where they're pretending to drink strychnine or some other poison, to the poison-drinking, snake-handling sect of Pentecostalism. Branham mentions this in one recording, and he talks about some very strange revivals that he held with Davis. But Davis is there in the background. At the same time, you have Congressman William D. Upshaw, which I've mentioned a few times. Upshaw is part of the reason why you can't buy beer on Sunday. He is one of the people who was very strongly advocating for eliminating all liquor and alcohol in the United States. He became known as the driest of the dries. He and others were converting many states to that same ideology. And in fact, for a period of time, it became so popular that he was running for president under a platform called the Prohibition Party. Either president or vice president, you have to look this up. But Upshaw is important in two ways. Number one, he's connected to Davis throughout his history. He and Davis are working together. Number two, he's connected to Branham, and Branham pretends not to know him, which is kind of funny. He poses as a wheelchair invalid in one of Branham's meetings after having been, as I said, running through the aisles in Congress. He sits in a wheelchair, and Branham says, oh, look, there's this congressman who's sitting there. He's been crippled for 66 years, confined to beds and wheelchairs. Rise up and stand and be healed. So the congressman rises up and stands to be healed, and he was lifting Branham into fame. I mean, that's really the only way that you can look at this. But he was also the vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention. I came across that years ago, and I really didn't know what to do with it, because in my head, I had separated the revivals from the Baptists, from the Methodists, from all of these other organizations, even though I myself knew that many of those organizations did join into the revival. And I think to many historians who have looked at this, like the people asking about Cindy Jacobs, you look at her background, you see a Baptist background, and you think, well, that's not compatible. How could a Baptist turn out to be like this? She totally left her Baptist roots. I'm going to argue in this podcast, no, that's not what happened here. Maybe there were certain flavors of Baptists and maybe different regions and districts of Baptists, but especially in the regions that Cindy Jacobs was in, this was compatible. And in fact, there were Baptists who joined into the revivals. Not all. Obviously, Baptists also condemned it. I should be clear to mention that. William Branham's famous halo photograph that's taken of the lighting in the Sam Houston Coliseum was taken during a debate between a Baptist minister who's arguing, I believe in divine healing, but I don't believe in divine healers. And he was arguing against William Branham and others who were in the divine healers camp. So you have Baptist ministers who came against the revivals, but you also had Baptist ministers who were compatible. And usually, especially in the case of Davis, I would say the compatibility wasn't so much about the religion as it was the agenda. And that's the point that I really want to stress. I want to go deep with that because I want people to understand what I'm talking about. It isn't that I'm saying white supremacy is connected to Cindy Jacobs or that the Baptists are deep into white supremacy, anything like this. But there were political ideologies that were connecting groups of people together. And unfortunately, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was through some very, very awful things, especially in Dallas. There were several ministers who were rising up in all kinds of camps, from Baptists to Pentecostals, saying that we cannot let black people in the schools with children with our white children. That really was the issue. That was the big Dallas issue. Whenever Roy Davis, William Branham's mentor, finally migrates to Dallas, he is there as the leader, the wizard of the K's, I'll say it like that, and he was embedded into several different Oak Cliff white citizens councils, different councils to try to eradicate this, and he was one of the most outspoken people against it. There were other people who were in his vicinity. He's in a neighborhood that apparently was breeding some people of similar agenda, which I won't talk about that, but you can go look at some of the people that were there close to where Davis was. He's in a place where the evangelicals are rising up, banding together, trying to fight the United States government, because the government is trying to impose to the states, you must integrate your schools. And this turned into all-out war. In fact, there were military vehicles that were present in some of these places. So I'm going to get into that history a bit, but now let's go back and talk about Cindy Jacobs and the parent that goes unnamed. When I began trying to trace the parents of Cindy Jacobs so that I could learn the family religious history, there's not much you can find. There is a single obituary that I was able to find, the obituary of Eleanor Johnson Lindsay. And yes, that name threw me for a bit because William Branham's campaign manager was also Lindsay, but the spelling is different. One ends in E-Y, one ends in A-Y. Eleanor Johnson Lindsay was born in Fulton, Missouri, March 27th, 1926, to George and Lucille McJilton, passed away in 2016. And you can read through a wide history of her time in Texas until she died, apparently. One of the things that it mentions in here is that she had a husband who is named Albert, who passed away at the age of 49. After that, she married Thomas Lindsay, and they were married for 35 years. It says Eleanor was survived by her son, Richard Johnson, who is a missionary to China. her daughter, Cindy Jacobs, who is also a minister, and three grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. So it mentions the daughter, Cindy Jacobs. It does not really talk about her husband, Albert, very much. So you have to kind of dig into this, and how do you do this? I started looking through some of the things that Cindy Jacobs and others have said about her parents, and I learned that Albert was a Baptist minister in Texas. He was also a church planter in Texas, which gave me just a little bit to work with. The only real problem is Albert Johnson, which was his name, is a very extremely common name. And there's nothing that tells me which Albert Johnson, what was the middle name, where, what part of Texas, where did he plant his churches, what were the churches' names. So hours upon hours upon hours of time was spent in the newspapers trying to figure all of this out. And it is very difficult to figure out. But before I get into that history, I'm going to qualify it, because as any historian would, there is a level of accuracy that you cannot get to unless you can actually talk to the people and get who all of their connections of their family history, all of the names of them, the places, etc. But I was able to piece together fairly accurately, at least from the information that I have, some of the information, some of the cities and some of the locations. And then there's also a level of plausible accuracy. So as I get into some of this, I'll tell you, yes, this is probably her father. This may be her father. It really looks like her father. And then there's a few that I excluded that I won't even put on the podcast, because they, even though it was the same name minister, same planting Baptist churches, he was definitely not her father. I can say that with certainty. So I did go through this history. I did get some information. And interestingly, there is a strange connection to Roy Davis.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
Before I get into talking about Albert Johnson, who was Cindy Jacobs' father, Roy Davis and the Kays, and all of the information in between, I want to assure the people that I'm not saying that Albert was in the Kays. But what I am saying, and this is pretty evident from not just the research that I've done here, but many other researchers have came to the same conclusion, there was a wide swath of the evangelical, Pentecostal, Baptist, different groups of people in the South who were aligned on the same political agenda. And because of that alignment, you had many different things that could cause cross-pollination of ideas. Some of it was the Kays. You might attend a Kays rally and you might pick up information. Or you might be a member of one of the councils and you might pick up information. You might simply go to a revival meeting where you had people like William Branham and the Full Gospel Businessmen bringing all of these different groups of people together. Well, if you bring them together in the South, the most hot topic in the South, obviously, is this agenda that I'm going to be getting into. So people are aware that this exists. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm saying that, you know, Albert Johnson and the Kays are connected in any way, but I'll let you as the listener determine whether you think they were or not. But what I want to first say is that whenever Albert and Eleanor first got married, they went to Dallas immediately after their marriage. That is significant because it puts them in the proximity of
the heart of all of my research. I mean, think Christ for the Nations, which was in Dallas. Before it was Christ for the Nations, it was the Voice of Healing, which was in Dallas. Before that, Voice of Healing, the headquarters was in Shreveport, Louisiana. And apparently, Albert and Eleanor also spent time in Louisiana. So they may have had some connections there, but Dallas is where I'm going to focus on first, because after they got married, the marriage itself was in Oak Cliff Presbyterian Church. So it's in the Oak Cliff subdivision. Already we see a proximity. It doesn't mean that they're connected in any way, shape, or form, but it does mention that Albert planned to enter into School of Theology, and being there in Oak Cliff, he, as a theologian, he would be connected to other theologians. In that time, in that space, in that era, you're going to find theologians who were banding together to fight against the different evils, which is a funny side story I'll show here in just a minute with a plausible father figure. But we have reference points for this. You can look at the San Antonio Express News in 1946. It talks about they're going to be residing in Dallas. You can look at the San Antonio Light, which mentions the Oak Cliff Presbyterian Church. These aren't things that I'm inventing or trying to piece together. These are declared in the newspapers. So Dallas becomes the first confirmed city that I can find Albert Sheldon Johnson. And I'm able to get his middle name, Sheldon, from that newspaper. So before he became Baptist, before he entered into Southwestern Seminary, which we'll get into, he's in the heart of Dallas. While he's in the Dallas area, there is a weird thing that happens that is the side story. He comes out strongly against comics. Yes, comics. There is a newspaper article. I'll pull it up if you're watching the video version of this podcast. The article is entitled Battle on Horror Comics Here and Across the Nation. And this is one that I mentioned. I have some articles that I don't know if it's the father or not, but it's very plausible. This one is very plausible for multiple reasons. I won't get into those reasons here. I will eventually publish all of these newspaper articles to the website, and you can see them on the Cindy Jacobs page. It isn't really that important, other than the fact that this is a person who is outspoken against things like comics. So you can see him joining into a battle which would have an agenda, which would connect him to multiple people. And in this case, it actually connected him to the city councils. That becomes important later, which I'll get into. But in the newspaper article, it mentions his name. It says, in Fort Worth, Texas, the city council passed an ordinance this summer banning lewd comic books and those which tend to incite minors to disregard the law. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Oklahoma City, Stockton, California, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and other cities have written for information on the ordinance. Baton Rouge is another interesting point, because I believe that's where the family was at one point in time, according to the newspapers. But it says the council took action after a young Baptist ministerial student, Reverend Albert S. Johnson, father of two children, appeared before a council meeting with a stack of cheap, trashy comic books he had purchased at a newsstand near City Hall. The reason why I wanted to bring this particular article up isn't so much about the comic books, but it is about Fort Worth City Hall. So I can place the family in Fort Worth, in the City Hall. They're speaking to the councils. Well, you can also go back to The Voice of Healing, when Roy Davis was published in The Voice of Healing, and think about that just a second. The leader of the K's, or the future leader of the K's, the one who's rising up to become leader of the K's, is featured on one of the articles in The Voice of Healing published by Gordon Lindsay, who's later in Dallas. Not long after this, he's in Dallas. In The Voice of Healing issue, William Branham's first pastor, Roy Davis says this, "I'm a member of the Fort Worth, Texas Chamber of Commerce and on the executive committee of the same. I was born and reared near this Texas city, converted there, and ordained to preach the gospel in a well-known Baptist church of Texas. Until recently, I was working with the Assembly of God, though not a member with them. I've had some truly great campaigns with them, and my present business manager, Reverend J.F. Owens, is now and has been a pastor for some 6 years of the Granbury, Texas Assembly of God. And he goes on to talk about the Assemblies of God churches, the Pentecostal churches, the Foursquare ministers. He is connecting all of the dots for you in this one letter that is published by Gordon Lindsay. Again, Gordon Lindsay publishing, the former second in command of the K's, the future leader of the K's. It's really odd that Gordon Lindsay does this. This is a person who is well known as a leader of the K's and other similar organizations. Lindsay publishes him, and he connects the dots for you. I don't even have to connect the dots. I just have to read the letter. And you can see the Baptists are working with the Assemblies. They're working with the Pentecostal organizations. He mentions them here. And he's going on to talk about how the revival is coming into Texas. So he's laying the groundwork that I didn't even have to dig into. I just read through his article. But it's the groundwork for me to understand how a cross-pollination of ideas can come to be. And keep in mind, this is where Cindy Jacobs is being raised. So she's being raised in that type of environment. When you go attend a Baptist church today, a Southern Baptist church, etc., you hear a much different version of the ministry than you did back in the 50s and 60s. In the same type of convention, especially in the South, because they were more receptive to this type of idea. Yes, there were ministers probably in the North who had doctrines against this type of thing. And yes, in Houston, Texas, there's the famous battle between, I think his name is Reverend Best and William Branham, where the Baptists are fighting this kind of thing. But you do have cross-pollination and you have compatibility. That compatibility comes through people like Davis, who are organizing people against a common enemy, which they, in that era, believed to be the government of the United States. Roy Davis is uniting people. He will eventually bring it to a head when he starts doing things like cross ceremonies. I'm going to say ceremonies, but you know what I'm talking about with the K's, in the lawns of certain senators or congressmen. This is a person who is he's inciting violence. That's the kind of person he is. And Roy Davis is bringing together many different people to fight the common enemy. They did not like the fact that the federal government was pushing federal mandates to the state government and to the local government. They saw this as an abuse of power, especially in Dallas. So Davis is organizing this. Davis is on the Chamber of Commerce in Fort Worth, and this is the very place where the comic ideas gets pushed by what appears to be, and we only have the middle initial here, but what are the odds? Now, there are some other newspaper articles that will connect this and make this more apparent, but still, it's a plausible history. It's not what I would say fully vetted, because there is no way I can go back and fully vet this. But there's a reason why his name is not mentioned. I don't know what that reason is. It's just really odd to me. Some articles that I did use as reference points to try to make this more plausible. The Waco News Tribune, 1950, August 17th, it mentions that Albert Sheldon Johnson, which is our Albert Sheldon, was a Baylor graduate, and it lists his name among the those who were getting a Bachelor of Arts and their candidates. You can go down the line of newspaper articles. If you get newspaper.com subscription, you can go through and you can kind of connect all of these dots. It looks very, very plausible. I'll just say it like that. But the Baylor Record turns Albert Sheldon Johnson from a Dallas theological student into a documented Baptist University student. So that 1952 San Antonio notice then puts Reverend Albert Johnson of Baylor University into the Baptist pulpit, and from there, now you can connect further dots. So it opens the door for further research, which is what it did for me. The other clues, if you read through the article, and there are several different comic book articles, but it talks about Johnson, it gives his middle initial, his age, his family status, says he's a 30-year-old father of two children and a student at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. So all of that matches our Robert Sheldon Johnson, but because we don't have Sheldon, we have Robert S. Johnson. Still, it's plausible, but there's no way to really fully confirm that. Some other articles that I did bring up whenever I was looking into just simply the family mention in the comic articles. Lubbock Evening Journal, 1954, July 8th. It's called A Student Shows 10-Cent Crime Lessons in Fort Worth. You can read through that. There's also Fort Worth Telegram, 1954, July 11th. It talks about the youth court and identifies Albert S. Johnson as the man who brought the crime horror comic, but it places him in Fort Worth. It identifies Professor James Daniel of the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. So we know this was a Baptist minister. Again, there are several others that you can go through. Newspapers.com is where I went. But by 1954, Albert Johnson was not simply training for ministry. He was becoming very active in the public, in the moral politics of the era. So he was getting, he was developing his political agenda, and for him, it was comic books, which sounds odd in today's world, especially if you go to the grocery store and you see comic books everywhere. And for me, it really hurts a little bit because we weren't allowed to have comics in the Branham cult. That was one of the rules that we were not allowed to have. And I'm reading this and I'm starting to understand, well, wait a minute, that's tied to Albert Johnson. Can I really blame Cindy Jacobs' father for this? That actually went through my head, but it's the way that I was raised. My children, they can read comics. We have all kinds of fun. Sadly, they don't want to read them. But anyway, that's a weird history, but it did connect some dots. What that gave me was Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. So let's talk a little bit about why that matters, because that opened the door to connecting it all the way round trip further to Davis, more solidly than I thought it would. I've talked about this in various different places because this is truly one of the most interesting parts of history that you just can't make this stuff up. But Davis is in Jeffersonville, Indiana, planting what would eventually become my grandfather's church here in Jeffersonville. It became William Branham's church and later my grandfather's church. Davis gets arrested and taken all the way to Arkansas and finally serves some prison time. So while he's in Arkansas serving prison time, Branham becomes partially the big name that he was, not quite to the level that he was by the latter reign, but his name was getting around, and there are some pamphlets where you can hear about it. He's beginning his early ministry, his healing ministry. He's apparently still connected to Davis, which he mentions later. But Davis gets out of prison, and Davis goes to San Bernardino, California. And he claims to have had a vision of a peach while he was a Baptist minister at a Baptist church in San Bernardino, California. And this convinced several of the local rich folks to start investing in creating what would be called the Usher Davis Children's Orphanage. And this is where the history for me and the Branham history just really exploded, because the newspaper articles for the trial that ensued connected all of the dots. Now I know that this is the same Davis that Branham was connected to. Now I know that this is the same Davis who is the heads of the K's. Now I know that he's still working with Congressman Upshaw before Branham's alleged healing of Upshaw. And there's one article that really spells it out clearly. And it mentions the ties back to Cindy Jacobs' potential father figure. And I'm using the word potential. It looks like it to me, but I'm using the word potential. There's an article in San Bernardino County Sun, August 8, 1943, entitled Orphanage School at Upland, slated to open September 15th. In this, it talks about Roy Davis, the pastor of the Upland Baptist Church and the president of the association, the Children's Association. It mentions Dr. John Williams of San Diego is the superintendent, which is kind of important, but not to this research. It talks about arrangements being made to secure the majority of faculty members Let me read that again. The majority of faculty members from the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary at Fort Worth, Texas. It goes on to say, former Representative William D. Upshaw is taking an active part in the organization of the institution and is to be in charge of the Department of Americanism. And for any of you who are unfamiliar with this term, the Department of Americanism, that is how the K's used coded language to talk about their political agenda to reclaim control of the United States government. They would say, these people aren't true Americans. We need to teach them true Americanism. So, long story short, and you can read through this history. I've got it published on the website, and we've talked about it several times. This was a precursor to the rebirth of the K's in California. Right after this happens, the K's get connected. Foursquare Church, which is one of the churches that Roy Davis mentioned in his letter, Foursquare Church graduates of the Life Bible College, such as Wesley Swift, join forces in this. They become heads of the K's. Swift is later working with Davis in Little Rock, Arkansas. All of this is coming to a head that would eventually become the third wave of the K's. So this is a big, big deal. The orphanage appeared to be a funding scandal. There were two, according to the court records that you can read in the newspapers, there were two sets of books, and apparently Upshaw was in charge of the books, if I understood it correctly. But there were two sets of books. One of them were what the donor saw. One of them was where the money was actually going. And Davis somehow wiggles out of all of this. It's really weird, because even whenever they were starting the orphanage, you can read through the trial, he's posing as a government agent, and William Upshaw is the one who's connecting him as a government agent to, like, the famous or the very wealthy Elizabeth Usher, whose name is on the organization. So all of this is just, none of it makes really sense. However, it does make a connection back to Cindy Jacobs' father, because it says specifically, we're making arrangements to secure a majority of the faculty members from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Now, does that mean that her father came to this orphanage? No. This happened right before he became a student in Southwestern. What I'm referring to specifically is the cross-pollination of ideas, because you have Davis and you have Upshaw with this political agenda. You have Southwestern who's going, we're going to give all of our students, a majority of our faculty, to help start this organization. That's how weird this gets. You have Upshaw, who was the vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention, and this is a Southern Baptist school. So he's using his ties. This is the same school, the Southwestern Baptist Seminary, same exact school that that Cindy Jacobs' father went to. Now, it was later. It wasn't that he was part of any of this that I'm talking about, but the seeds had been planted. They were growing. They were cross-pollinating, and it's at a time when Davis himself mentions we have Baptists, we have Pentecostals, we have Assemblies of God, UPC, all of these different groups. They're coming together as part of our agenda, part of our fight. Part of that fight, as I said, was Americanism. And look at some of the modern themes that you find in the New Apostolic Reformation in organizations like Cindy Jacobs. We need to fight to take America back. We need dominionism. We need all of these different things that are saying that we as a church are going to take back what we apparently allegedly lost. That's the same themes that I'm finding back in the 40s and 50s. It's exactly what they were doing. So let's fast forward from the San Bernardino event to 1951. That is the year that Cindy Jacobs is born in San Antonio, Texas. That is also the year that William Upshaw, whenever William Branham's ministry was declining because he was being rejected for bad theology, William Upshaw decided that he was going to no longer use crutches after attending a Branham event. And I'm using that word purposefully. He decided this because the way it plays out, if you listen to what William Branham says about it, this man, Upshaw, who has not been in a wheelchair since he was a young boy, who did use crutches, and you can find photographs of him everywhere with crutches. But according to other congressmen, he was running down the aisles. His crutches barely even touched the ground. He really didn't need them. He could be using a brace if he wanted to. Suddenly, he shows up in one of William Branham's meetings in a wheelchair. And William Branham says, "Rise up and be healed." And in 1951, he goes on tour praising Branham. And here's an article I'll pull up from the Courier Journal, which is in Louisville, Kentucky, right across the river from Jeffersonville. He plans to talk in Jeffersonville, it says. It says, "Free of the crutches he used for 42 years, the Reverend William D. Upshaw, wheel horse of the Prohibition forces, yesterday pointed to the Women's Christian Temperance Union symbol on his coat lapel and remarked, 'I want to show these wet rascals up here that I haven't lowered my flag one bit.'" So he's still promoting the dry agenda. But he talks about William Branham healing, and he says his heart leaped and he got up and he walked for the first time. So he says. Now, maybe he believes it. I don't know. But if you listen to the testimony of other congressmen, certainly that was not the case. And certainly he did not need to be in a wheelchair. In fact, I don't even think the wheelchair is mentioned in this article, but it does mention that he was in Louisville in 1927, elected a Southern Baptist Convention vice president. So from 1927 all the way up to, it was mentioned again in the newspapers in San Bernardino in the mid-40s, he has been a vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention for that long. It tells me that there was a pretty deep connection. There had to have been. So this is 1950. He's talking about the Southern Baptists, and he's talking about the Prohibition Party, all of the different things that he has done. He is on tour with many of the healing evangelists and revivalists trying to help spread the divine healing, World War II healing revivals. Why is he doing this? I don't know. Why would a person who's helping to rebuild the K's out in California decide he wants to embed himself directly with William Branham and the healing revivalists? And not just Branham, he's working with others as well. Branham mentions that it was Roy Davis, his mentor, his trainer, the person who ordained him into the Pentecostal faith. He said it was Roy Davis who convinced him to go to Branham. So if you put all of these pieces together, you see a puzzle that it doesn't look good. I'm just going to say it like that. It does not look good. But all of this is happening before and leading up to the point at which Cindy Jacobs is born. So you can't say Cindy Jacobs is in any way, shape, or form connected to any of this, but this is the type of environment that she grew up in. So when people ask me, what was her theological lineage? Well, how do you define that? If you say Southern Baptist, they're going to immediately think about what Southern Baptists are today, and they're going to think about Southern Baptists not in the state of Texas that were quite different in the state of Texas back then. How do you define it? I can't really define it. What I can say is that Davis, who's working with the vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention, is touring through Assemblies of God churches throughout Texas. Davis is joining into the healing revivals. Davis is being published by Gordon Lindsay and the Voice of Healing. This is a man who is connecting many people together, and his purpose is not religion, whether he says it or not. It's more about the agenda that he's pushing as the head of the K's. And later on, which I won't get into that in this podcast, but later on in the newspapers, you find out what that agenda was. He is one of the most outspoken against the integration of black people and white people in the school systems in Dallas and Fort Worth. So he's fighting it. He's building an army to fight it. If you think Joel's army, this is the kind of army that's underneath the hood of Joel's army. This is what was being built. And that is the breeding ground that bred many people, not just Jacobs. And yet at the same time, many of the people it bred, I can't say have any connections to white supremacy at all, but they do have a very political version of their religion. And if there's one point that I could stress in this entire podcast, it's that this was a breeding ground for the merging of really anti-government politics and religion. That is what was happening, and it was happening because of people like Roy Davis, people like William Upshaw. So if you follow this trail of history and you connect all of these dots, I don't know if it helps you. I don't know if it gives you the flowchart you're wanting, but it gives me the flowchart of a mess. I look at it more like somebody asked me, can you make a flowchart with all the charts and diagrams like you did for Latter Rain with people like Cindy Jacobs? And I thought more like, I don't know if you've seen the Family Circus where Billy's going around and it shows the dots and trails of every place that Billy went. It's more confusing like that, I think, than it is a flowchart that's a structured design. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.